You know what it is with Christmas? There aren't many surprises because we all know what happens, don't we? So that's one of the things with Christmas. But I have got a question that I'd just like to ask you. What do you give to someone who has everything? I'm told that I'm very difficult to buy presents for because if I want something and I can afford it, I go and buy it. And if I want something I can't afford it, well, the likelihood is that whoever's thinking of me can't afford it either. So what do you give someone who has everything that they need or that they want? I was thinking about some of these tech billionaires when I wrote this answer. You know, people like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg. Perhaps the gift they could have is some perspective on how other people are living. Because it seems to me that if you can afford to, you know, fly to outer space and all these other things that they're planning to do, you could probably do with some perspective about what are the really important things on this world, on this earth that are happening. But I would like to share some scripture with you, some verses from the Bible. This is from Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who's been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." Now, those words, I was listening, some of you know, I listen to quite a lot of history podcasts when I'm cooking. When I'm various things I'm doing, I listen to a lot of history podcasts. And I was listening to something that really inspired me when I was reading about this particular part of the Christmas story. Because I discovered that the Magi were, we believe now, they were Zoroastrian priests from Parthia. Now, actually, that map that Alison had up on the screen, those of you who are in the service this morning, if you go due east from Jerusalem and from Israel, you hit this place called Parthia, the Parthian Empire. And the Parthian Empire became the Persian Empire. And the Persian Empire is now Iran. Thank you. Is now Iran. And so Zoroastrian, Iran now of course is Shiite Muslim, but before it was Shiite Muslim, it was the center of the Zoroastrian faith. And the Zoroastrians, there's still a few of them around, they particularly do still pay attention to the stars. They believe that the stars are incredibly important in understanding how their life is and how it will be. So I was really sort of really taken up with this whole idea of these priests coming from the east, from Parthia. And of course, they were on one of the major trade routes through the Middle East. So actually, it wouldn't have been so unusual for King Herod to have these priests from the east, from Parthia, passing through. It would have been a regular thing that happened because, of course, Israel is at the confluence of lots of the trade routes through the Middle East. And we read that the Magi, these priests from Parthia, saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, any of the children here, can you tell me how many Magi were there? Can you shout it out to me? Three! Wrong! Well, we don't know. We know there were three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But we don't actually know how many actual Magi there were. And actually, in places, in parts of the Middle East, there is a belief that there were 12 of these Magi. And in another country, they believe there are 24 that all traveled. They had the three gifts, but there may have been more or less than three of the actual Magi. We've got the traditional explanations for what each of the gifts meant. So we have the gold signifying royalty. We have the frankincense, which symbolizes divinity. And we have, of course, the myrrh signifying death. And I always think it must have been, difficult for Mary to be, and Joseph, to be seeing those gifts and to understand something of why those gifts, wondering why those gifts were given. But for a moment or two, I'd like to look at those gifts in a little bit more detail. Gold. It's amazing. Gold is an amazing sort of substance, amazing element. Because actually, we find it in ore. Now this is in quartz, so the underlying rock is quartz, but on the outside of it you can see the gold stuck around, the gold ore attached to the quartz. And what so often happens is that gold is inert. In other words, it doesn't react with other elements and with other things like water. And so as the quartz or as the other rock is washed away, then what happens is the gold remains and you'll have tiny little bits of gold, and that's why they're found in rivers. Because actually they get washed out of the rock and they get washed down into the rivers. And here we have a representation of panning for gold in ancient Egypt. So, you know, the gold rush in the States, the Yukon or all of that sort of thing, that wasn't the first. Panning for gold has been happening for millennia. And of course, what you can make with gold is incredibly beautiful. This here is a pendant from a Jewish necklace. And if you look carefully, you can see there's a menorah, which is a seven candlestick sort of thing, a particular Jewish type of candle holder. And this was found, I'm told, this week, it was found at the bottom of the Temple Mount. I was looking for something and found this very article that has just been discovered. So there's gold. Frankincense. Now there is frankincense. Now it looks a bit like sort of, brown sugar. And it looks a bit like, I heard about somebody who misunderstood what it was. And they took a handful, oh, I love a bit of sugar, stuck it in their mouth. Well, it had a real impact because it's very, very strong. And, I think they were drinking water for a long while after having put a couple of granules of frankincense in their mouth. But actually, the idea is divinity. Why is this connected to divinity? Well, the idea is that the beautiful aroma, so when you put fire or heat up frankincense, you get this beautiful smell. I remember when I was over the road at St. Luke's, they use incense. And there's that beautiful smell of incense that you get that is quite strong. But of course, in a contained situation, it is really, really strong. And so the idea is that this beautiful aroma arises up, goes up into the air, and the idea being that it's pleasing to God. This smell is a pleasing smell to God, particularly back then when there was quite a lot of smelly things around. You know, you had horse mess, all sorts of other things, you know, and actually the beautiful smell of incense could really overcome that. Now actually, incense comes from a pretty plain looking tree. That tree there, it's called the Boswellia sacra tree. Now that's its Latin name because it was discovered by a man called Boswell. But actually, of course, it was known well before that, but the name it's retained is the Latin name. And here we have an interesting picture. Now, can you see there? There's a man with a needle in his hand, and he's inserting it underneath the bark of this tree, the Boswellia sacra tree. And I'm going to tell you what happens in a moment, because I want to first of all go on to myrrh. And there we have myrrh. And actually, this one is less easy to mistake for, brown sugar. It's darker and it's redder, reddy brown. And of course, this signifies death, because it was the most effective spice for embalming bodies. Once again, to deal with smells. It had a bitter sweet smell. Once again, there's a really plain looking, rather gnarly looking tree there that it comes from. And this one's called, once again, it's the Latin name, Commiphora myrrha tree. I'm guessing that's how you pronounce it. I always find if you're not sure, say it with confidence, people will believe you. So the Commiphora myrrha tree. And have a look again. Now remember what happened, like the man stuck that needle underneath the bark, and both trees react in the same way. See the hand there? You have some sap that is dripping down out of the wound that's been made under the bark. Now you have to be incredibly careful with both of these trees. If you wound the tree too much, what happens is an infection can get in and it will kill the tree. So you have to make an incision of just the right depth and just the right size to bring forward the white sap that you can see there. And then what happens over the next week to 10 days is that the sap dries. And so the picture on the other side, you can see if you look carefully, the sap is still, it's dribbled down, but it's now become resin. It's hardened. And that's what you get from these two trees. Now, these trees are both found in the Arabian Peninsula. So that really is Oman and Yemen. What a troubled place Yemen is at the moment. And these trees are harvested by Bedouin communities. Those are traveling communities. They travel round. And of course, myrrh and frankincense are really, really expensive. And so this is one of the ways in which the Bedouin people, they harvest the frankincense and the myrrh, and they use that to be able to fund their lifestyle. And they gently chip away and make this small cut. And I just found that really interesting. So I want to just for a moment or two have a think about these gifts, the three gifts that we have that the Magi bring. We start with gold. It's beautiful. Anybody wearing any gold here this evening? Yep. Okay. It's also rare. We only get a tiny amount of extra gold that we find each year. A tiny amount in comparison with iron that, you know, is all over the place, and other things like copper. It's durable. You can beat gold into all sorts of different shapes and it won't break. It won't split. It is durable. It's also malleable, as I said. You can make it into all sorts of different shapes. It's unchanging. The word I used earlier, it's an inert metal. So it doesn't react with lots of other things. It's highly conductive. I didn't know this. Gold is highly conductive of electricity. And so it's incredibly useful. The thing that I find most interesting about gold is its cultural significance. Why is it that when troubles come in our world, I'm told that, you know, people stop buying stocks and shares. What do they buy instead? Gold. What is it about gold? I think to myself, you know, if things got really troubled, would I buy gold? No, I think I'd probably buy a loaf of bread or something. You know what I mean? But it's interesting, isn't it? In times of trouble, people look to gold because they, even in troubled times, it retains its value. It retains its value. So there's gold. And there we have some frankincense and some myrrh. What about these? Well, it comes from those gnarly, delicate trees that I showed you pictures of a moment ago. And there's that that intricate extraction method. It's highly aromatic. When you smell it, it really, you know, it can make you sneeze when you're smelling frankincense or myrrh. Highly aromatic. You may not know it's antibacterial. Because, of course, the tree is trying to protect itself from the wound that has been made in the bark. And just like the human body tries to respond to, you know, any sort of cuts or whatever, and we tend to grow a scab. Well, this, in a sense, this is the tree's scab, trying to protect itself from this wound. And it produces this really powerful smelling, these two types of powerfully smelling sap. It's a mood lifter. Both of these, they tend to lift the mood. In particular, the frankincense, the smell is a one that lifts your spirit, lifts your mood. It's also an insect repellent. Once again, what would the tree want to do? Well, it would want to stop any insect coming in that might lay their eggs in that wound on the tree, or in some other way infect the inside of the tree. And so we discover these amazing abilities of the myrrh and the frankincense. And I was just so challenged as I listened to this history podcast of all that the amazing gifts that were brought to Jesus. They've got so many attributes that I knew nothing about and I think are just so exciting. The greatest gift we could ever receive is the baby Jesus who became the man Jesus, who gave his life for us. And I just thought of some of the characteristics of these gifts, that he came from really lowly background, like the gnarly tree that we were talking about. He was so significant within our culture, but actually he is a one who also sort of is able to deal with the spiritual bacteria of our world. And so I think these gifts say something else more than the gifts they are. They also remind us of the creativity of God. And these characteristics, each one of us, we can bring our own gifts. The most important gift we can bring is our lives. Each one of us is unique. Each one of us is diverse in who we are and what we bring. Each one of us is complex. God wants to receive us as we are, just as complex and as incredibly diverse as the three gifts. Thank you.